And speaking of Burundi, we are now joined by Peskesi Minani. Are you there, sir? Madam, pardon me.
Yes, I'm here, sir.
Please forgive me. Now, you've written two really important articles. I urge people to go to the site, Burundi-24, about matters to do with Burundian women and their voices and what they think about the present crisis of the country. But I guess the more timely, or I shouldn't say timely, but the one that is really at the top of our minds is the issue of talk by Western states, and certainly Belgium. And,
yes.
And there's been speculation in the Canadian press about sending our soldiers into your country to sort matters out according to, you know, whatever. I don't know why, how they justify it. Let's ask you, what are you hearing? Where is this coming from? And what's your answer to those who say, oh, Belgium or Canada should send soldiers to Burundi?
My first question to them will be, what is happening in Burundi that can motivate them to go there? First of all, Burundi has 7,000 military out of Burundi who are fighting against terrorism. Some of them, they are in Somalia, and they are doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
So if Burundi needs military to ensure security, the country has to call first their own.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see any need for Burundi.
Have you noticed?
And also,
yes.
After my question, I will ask them, what did the foreign military group did in Rwanda in 1994?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It was a preparation of genocide, but the genocide went ahead for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, there was United Nations presence there. What do they do to prevent the genocide? Nothing. So why they should send the foreign military in Burundi right now? And what is happening in Burundi in order to send those people that they want to send?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, by the way, of course, you might, and I assume you would want to remind them that the government of Rwanda at that time asked the UN to please come.
They did ask, and the fact that what is happening in Rwanda and in Burundi and in general in the Great Lake region is an agenda from some Western countries.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not anymore about what the people need and what the people want, but it's about what is the agenda of some Western countries on that region. And it's very sad because it seems like they don't see the danger of what they are doing to those people.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you must have a question I have always about when I hear that Belgium is talking loud. Wouldn't it be right to ask, how is it that a former colonial power – Belgium, who in many ways is the author of some of the social problems that exist both in Rwanda and Burundi, how come they get to be considered the first European state to have an opinion or to do anything? Shouldn't they be – isn't that a conflict of interest? Shouldn't they be put at the bottom of the list of anybody who does anything?
Belgium should be ashamed of the role that it played in Burundi. First of all, I'm not saying that if there is division between Hutus and Tutsis because of them, but they didn't do nothing to reduce the tension between all those, between the two ethnic groups. The first time there was a genocide in Burundi, it was 1997, and it was a genocide against Tutsi.
Mm-hmm.
Belgium was there.
Mm-hmm.
It did nothing. 1965. Hutus were killed. Belgium didn't say anything. 1968, same thing. 1988, same thing. 1993, when the first elected Hutu president was elected, he was killed after 3 months. What did Belgium did? Nothing. Now, the people took the responsibility to resolve their own problem, Belgium is coming to show that, yes, we care, and here we are to offer our support. The truth is that where we are right now as Burundian, we don't need any support from Belgium, because we know that when we need the support from Belgium, from France, we didn't get any support. So for now, I think I can just suggest that, please, let Burundians resolve their own problem.
And incidentally, and now how about those problems? I mean, one of the things I'm struck by, I read every day in my newspaper and on the net about problems in countries. I could read about Pakistan. I could read about other countries in Africa like Nigeria and where there's much more violence. And yet, in the case of Burundi, someone says a hand grenade was thrown into a market. Therefore, foreigners should come into the country of Burundi. I don't understand that at all. I mean, that would mean anyone could provoke an invasion simply by using five or six individuals willing to murder civilians.
I think the plan in Burundi is just to take the power from the political party that is in power. And this will cost the life of many people, because as I already remind everybody, Burundi has a long history of war and massacres and problems, ethnic problems. Mm-hmm. For now, right now we are talking, the Burundian army is 50% Hutu, 50% Tutsi. The police is 60% Hutu, 40% Tutsi. And among the soldiers, among the military, there are those who came from the bush, mm-hmm. who fought for more than 10 years to be where they are right now. And at the other hand, there are those who used to be in the military before 1993. They also know that the war is not an option for Burundi, because they know that war doesn't resolve problems. Mm-hmm. So from the military, I can say that the group is united. Of course, there are few people who are manipulated, who can leave the military and go to the opposition and start helping the young people to fight against the police and throw the grenades here and there. But in general, Burundian military is united, because they both know what is the war. Mm-hmm. So none of them really want to go back to war. Also, the people of Burundi, they are tired. I have to always remind that Burundi has 132 small cities. And out of 132... we have 4 to 5 more cities who have those young people who've been manipulated, which is less than 1% of the population. So for the international community to think about sending military intervention in Burundi because less than 1% of the population is throwing grenades here and there, for me, I don't get it anymore. I don't see where this globalization, this way of leading the world, where is going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, I want to ask you about the way the story is always framed. Actually, you can sort of write it. I get used to the language when I read about reports from your country, and certain phrases are always inserted, which are never closely examined. They're now given. And for example, they say it is said in the Toronto Star, Globe and Mail, New York Times, and I'm sure all the Belgian French press, they say, well, the trouble now started because of the decision of the president to run for a third term, and which was upheld by the court, the highest court of Burundi. But in fact, isn't it true that you've had a number of elections? And there are some elements who get mad every single election. So this is not really to do with May of last year, is it?
It has nothing to do with the president. It has nothing to do with him or his party to represent him as a candidate. Why do I always say that? I have two examples. Here in Ottawa, in 2013, there was a group of young people who were doing the demonstration saying no to the genocide in preparation in Burundi. Mm-hmm. When I saw them for the first time, I was like, wait a minute. I approached some of them because I know them. And I say, well, is there any preparation of genocide in Burundi? They said, yes. I said, but the military is 50% Hutu, 50% Tutsi. So who will plan a genocide against who? I never get an answer. Of course, 2014, the same group continued. No to the preparation of genocide in Burundi. 2015, when the crisis started in Burundi, the same group here in Ottawa was the first to go to the Canadian Parliament here, mm-hmm. saying that the genocide that we've been talking about, it is started. You have to act. Is now or is forever. Is now before Burundi becomes like Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
So how do they know that there was a genocide in preparation in Burundi? Mm-hmm. This is my question, which means they knew. Mm-hmm. They were preparing something. They were just waiting for elections time to act. This is one proof that president being there or not being there, it has nothing to do with him. The second example, in May 2015, the police found so many guns in different houses. I'm not talking about 10 grenades. No, I'm talking about 100 grenades in civil houses, in people's houses.
Mm-hmm.
What were those guns were doing in those houses if it was about elections? For example, if I'm fighting for democracy, do I have to buy guns and stock them in my house? If I buy guns, that means I'm preparing for a war.
Mm-hmm.
So all those people who talk about democracy and president to be there is just an excuse. It has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with him. And if it had to do with him, why out of 132 small cities of Burundi, only 4 cities went into the demonstration? It means that all the 128 doesn't care. They are Burundian. They care.
Mm-hmm.
Why less than 1%? Is the 1% that is more democratic than the other? My question will be, who is behind those young people? Because my heart cries when I see the images on Facebook, on Twitter, on wherever, young people killed on street, young people who are manipulated, they should be in school. They should be building up their own career, their own future, because those young people, they are the future of Burundi. Knowing that there's a small group that is manipulating them and sending them to fight with the police and the military, knowing that they may not come back alive, for me, it's like they are giving those young people as a sacrifice in order to say, here, the genocide is in Burundi. International community, come and intervene in our country. It's very sad.
Yeah, and that is the danger. You have Belgium and Canada and others talking as though they have that right and just waiting basically for you have to call it a pretext. Now, let me remind our listeners, we're speaking to Pascasie Menane. She's a PhD candidate in Ottawa. And you also have a neighbor, I was speaking of them just as we were introducing you, who's created a kind of an issue with what are called, and I'd like to know more about who they are, Burundian refugees who are in Rwanda And apparently there's a consensus of the reports that says that the government of Rwanda, Paul Kagame's government, has been arming and training a large number of people out of those camps, which, of course, is a violation of international law. And when he was told this was the case, he reacted angrily, and like an autocrat, he says, well, now I'm going to remove them to other countries. What other country? And by what right does he talk about removing refugees?
Well, I hope he's not going to send them to Burundi, because in 1994...
Well, that would be a crime outright, if you drive refugees, you know, out of camps, right?
Yes, because in 1994, Museveni said that all the refugees, all the people who were at, who attacked Rwanda at the border of Rwanda and Uganda, they were refugees who were coming to their own country. They were returning to Rwanda by force, is what he said.
That's a very good point. Very good point.
The truth is that he was helping them to attack Rwanda. So I hope by Kagame saying that he's going to send them somewhere, I hope he's not preparing to send them to Burundi by force with guns. Because if he tries to attack Burundi, pretending that the refugees are going back to their own country by force, the war may start at the border of Rwanda and Burundi, and it may end somewhere in Kigali.
Mm-hmm.
Because Burundian people, Burundian army, they are ready to fight for their country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not only Burundi. Now we have Tanzania. Tanzania is aware of all this plan that is going on at the international level for the region. Tanzania will not just sit and look Kagame attacking Burundi. South Africa is behind Burundi. Angola is behind Burundi.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the three countries. They are strong. They are strong countries in Africa. And they know, they understand what is going on. They understand how Burundi is being a victim of the international community. And I don't mean international community in a way of all the Western countries. No. It's few countries. Belgium, France, and from time to time, America.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, we are talking most of the time about Rwanda, that is training, as you just said, is training refugees, Belgium and France. And for Belgium and France, we have to understand one thing. They had control and they wanted to have control over the natural resources. But the Burundian authorities, they gave the market to Russia and China.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like Burundian authorities, they sinned against France and Belgium. And for those two countries, it's not acceptable. They need their own hands on natural resources in Burundi.
We've been learning, and I hope people have been following it closely enough to notice, there's been quite an education process in how this attempt to create a putsch or change of regime, as they call it, in Burundi, was manipulated. You had this executive decision, maybe it was hardly a month ago, a month and a half, where in Addis Ababa, unnamed people suddenly announced that they were going to send 5,000 troops to Burundi. And then when Burundi said, no, you're not, and then they said, well, maybe we better have a meeting. And then the presidents came and they said, behind closed doors, we're not going to send those troops. Then all of a sudden, a new voice came up, and the EU, European Union, now they say, well, we're going to put an embargo. Today, I think they're announcing they're not satisfied with Burundi. Were they a power behind that decision, that strange decision by the EU?
EU is being manipulated by France and Belgium. It's all I can say. The two countries, they are working hard to manipulate EU. And it's very sad because they know that if it has to pass through the Security Council, it will not pass. Because we have Russia and China. The two countries understand what is going on. They will not allow any legal intervention through the United Nations. If they have to attack, maybe they have to do it by their own ways. Who will give them the entrance? Rwanda, maybe. Tanzania, of course, no. Congo, of course, no. If they want to do what they did to Gaddafi, they can go and try. But people in Libya, they were not aware of what was coming after. People of Burundi, they've been through a lot. So they are ready to fight for their own country. Burundi will not be Libya. People in Libya, when the war was going on against Gaddafi, most of them, they were tired of him, which means they gave up easily. Mm-hmm. And also, it was so quick. Remember, in 1 year, Gaddafi was killed, which means most of people didn't take time to think about what is going on and what will be the consequences. But Burundian people, those who are in the country and us who are outside of country, we took time to think about it. And knowing that most of us, we grew up with the refugee status, we think about what happened in the past, what happened to our parents and our grandparents. Are we going to allow the same thing to happen to us and to the children of our children? The answer is no. The time has come where every Burundian have to know that nobody will love Burundi more than Burundians. And nobody will have to fight for Burundi more than Burundians. So when the government say no to any international or any outsider military intervention, I understand and I agree. And that is why I wrote the second article, No à l'invasion de mon pays.
Mm-hmm. Again, it's Peskezi Minani, and and it is an excellent article, by the way. Go to Burundi-24. There's a lot of excellent material there. And apropos, I have seen one of the things I found very moving. It was now almost a week, 2 weeks ago. I think one can still find it at the site. You could watch an hour and maybe 30 minutes of discussion in the parliament of Burundi, where every member of the parliament, men and women and various, and they all identified themselves according, well, didn't, not every single one, but they tended to say, I'm a Hutu, I'm Tutsi, I'm et cetera. And of course, many, many women, these are all elected people. They said why they rejected the African Union or anybody else dictating to them. But could you talk about that? And maybe you also have written about the women of Burundi. If you could just, I'd like to know your thoughts on that.
Yes, I really appreciated the way all those Burundian departments, they came together and they talk about the problem, saying that, listen, the genocide that you are talking about is not happening in my country. The genocide that you are talking, and something I really appreciated is saying, men and women, Hutu and Tutsis, coming together and say, listen, there's no genocide. Yes, there is a crisis in Burundi, but it's not a genocide. And it's not someone from outside who will intervene. It's us as Burundians. We will sit together and we will talk. There will be a dialogue. And I really encourage the government and the opposition to sit together and find the solution.
Mm-hmm.
What about the women in parliament? Something that I really criticize is that we don't see them. We have a minimum of 30% of women in parliament, but we don't hear about them. I'm sure they work hard in the parliament, but how about leaving the parliament's comfort zone and go in those cities? Because, as I said, even though it's only four or five small cities in the capital, still, those are Burundians. Their lives matter. Those young people, usually, traditionally, Burundian young people listen to mothers. when a mother speaks, the young people listen. To those women in parliament, they are not just women in politics, but they are also mothers.
Mm-hmm.
What I would like to see is them leaving the comfort zone, leave the parliament and go to those small cities, meet with the young people, listen to them, advise them, give them some, advise them, talk to them, show them that you care about them, and give them the word of wisdom. Encourage them to go back to school. Encourage them to go and find job or do small businesses. Encourage them and just sensibilization. Make them understand the consequences of what they are doing. Because one thing I always say, those young people in the small four cities, when the crisis will end, and after using drugs for a long time, their mind will not be the same. And who will be a victim? The sisters, the brothers, young brothers, the mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And after mothers and sisters, to be the neighbor. After the neighbor, they will leave the small cities. They will go to steal in town. So this should not be taken just as a problem in small cities. It should be taken as a national problem. Because when young people are using drugs in order to attack the policemen, in order to do bad things, and those women in parliament as a mother, they look at them as if they are not concerned. I'm sure they are concerned, but they are not doing anything to help those young people to think twice about their future, and is what I would like to see from them.
Well, based on what I saw, I'd be at least hopeful. I found them all very articulate. It was an impressive gathering. And lastly, I just want to, if you could just tell us again about the government of Burundi, as you outlined with the breakdown of the parliament and the military and the police, et cetera, in which there is 40%, 50%, et cetera, a division between ethnic groups. That is a result of a political compromise, and it's reflected in an actual multi-ethnic government, if we can use Canadian kind of terms here. Whereas the government with whom they're having problems, their neighboring government, that's a government of conquest. It didn't share power with anybody. Isn't that right?
The government of in Burundi, or you mean in Rwanda?
Rwanda, the Paul Kagame's RPF took power, but they did not. They didn't put in an Arusha Accord government. They put themselves in power, and they haven't allowed opposition.
Kagame is the Alpha and the Omega. He doesn't care about sharing the power, and I think he should be ashamed of. Anytime he sees how Burundian, they manage to resolve the ethnic problems, because in Burundian government, we have 60% of Hutu and 40% of Tutsi. In the parliament, same thing. The Senate is 50 Tutsi, 50 Hutu.
Mm-hmm.
Military is 50-50. And the police is 60 Hutu and 40 Tutsi.
Mm-hmm.
But him, in his own country, everything is in his hands. Where are the Hutus in Rwanda? They don't talk. We don't hear about them. What he managed to do is to tell Rwandese that Hutus and Tutsis, they are all Rwandese. So in Rwanda, nobody opened the mouth to talk about Hutu and Tutsi. And this is something that I like about Burundi. Hutus and Tutsi, they identify themselves, and they are proud of who they are. And they identify themselves with no shame,
mm-hmm.
and they are happy and proud to be who they are, which means they recognize you are Hutu, I'm Tutsi, we share the government, we share the parliament, we share the army, we share the police.
Yeah.
But in Rwanda, nobody will open the mouth to say I'm Tutsi or I'm Hutu. And at the beginning, when he took power, it was one thing he did. It was to wash brain, to tell Rwandese, you are just Rwandese. No Hutu, no Tutsi,
yeah.
Which means if you are just Rwandese, Don't say you are Hutu, you want a seat, because you are Rwandese. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And from the beginning, he managed to manipulate Rwandese in that way. But recently, we start seeing, even among the Tutsis who fought with him from Uganda, he starts killing most of them. We hear about those in South Africa.
Yes.
And in the U.S., we have a couple of them. Here in Canada, in Toronto, we have some of them. Mm. In Europe. So...
Yes, he even tells them to be still or something bad will happen. In the case of Mr. Karagea, he was strangled to death.
Yes.
And he was. He, they were personal friends until, I guess, that moment.
Oh, at least it's too long. Here in the U.S., he has so many people who grew up with him, who fought with him, who fought for him. But after, he was too big to have advice from them. And since most of them, they are doctors, they are more educated than him, mm-hmm. he felt as if he was in danger. And the fact that he's the Alpha and the Omega of Rwanda, he doesn't need anybody to say, why are you doing this? And no, you cannot do that. He just needs those who will say yes, sir, to whatever he will decide. And those who oppose to his decisions, automatically. Now it's not about Hutu or Tutsi. If you're against what he said, no matter what you did, no matter if you grew up with him or you worked hard for him from the beginning, he kills you. And if he doesn't, you have just to run for your life.
Well, I think you've really summed it up nicely, Peskesi Minani. I like the Alpha and Omega. Perfect. thank you very, very much. I hope we can talk to you again soon, and I hope the news gets better and better for your country.
Yes, I hope so, because Burundian people, we need peace.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye. And that's Peskesi Minani, and she is a PhD candidate in Ottawa, and I'm really glad we could talk to her, and I do recommend Burundi-24.com, and... you will see all kinds. And by the way, if you see French, don't be discouraged. There's a little device on your computer, and you put translate, and you'll be able to follow all the news. And it's, believe me, it's worth doing. Just you can. I know you're all better at computers than I am anyway. So just hit translate, and you will be able to get the latest news and opinions from Burundi.